Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Islam is the vehicle of Allah Ta'ala. When it is the vehicle of Allah Ta'ala, then Allah Ta'ala will ensure its continuity. It will continue, it will be sustained, and since he has declared that it must be till the end of time, it will remain till the end of time. If anybody comes in the way of Islam, he'll be crushed and thrown aside. But this vehicle will continue. It is the fortune of the individual that he jumps onto the train of Islam. You're born into the train of Islam, it will bring you to the shore of safety. And if you don't jump on, then it's to your peril. You'll be stranded, you'll be left in isolation. You board, it is to your advantage, and you remain out of it, then you remain stranded. But your boarding onto the train of Islam will not add to the beauty of Islam. Islam doesn't need us, we need Islam. It is beautiful in its own. It doesn't require any additional beauty. It's beautiful, it's complete, it's perfect. Everything is in Islam. So, it lends to your beauty. You don't lend towards the beauty of Islam. It helps you. It doesn't need your help. Because it is Allah Ta'ala's train. He's moving it. So Allah Ta'ala speaks about this. This train of Islam. مَيَّرْتَدَّ مِنْكُمْ عَنْ دِينِهِ. I have declared the continuity of this train of Islam till the day of Qiyamah. So I will guarantee its preservation as well. I will guarantee its continuity as well. And then if anybody prefers to jump out of it, may yartadda minkum, he prefers jumping out of it, then it's not a smash, it's not a train smash. It's not a problem for Islam. He jumped off the train of Islam. It wasn't a train smash. It is to his own peril. فَسَوْفَ يُؤْتِيَأْتِ اللَّهُ بِقَوْمِ يُحِبُّهُمْ وَيُحِبُّونَ. Allah Ta'ala will bring about a people. He will produce a people who will love him and they will love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He's showing as though that you will just disembark and the train of Islam will be filled up again. You will be thrown out and the train of Islam will not be left empty because of your disembarking, because of you getting out of it. It doesn't mean you jumped off, so now Islam is empty. Islam will still remain. Abdul Muttalib, when he had to go to negotiate the terms of the Baytullah, so all he asked for was the return of his camels. And Abraha told him, you know what, I'm shocked at your answer. I thought you were going to be negotiating the terms of the Baytullah, and you're talking about such a little thing like your camels must be returning to you. You could have been speaking about the Baytullah, and when I look at your grandeur, I look at your splendor, your personality, then I would have entertained this. But you are talking about such small, insignificant things, and you are leaving the Baytullah, the house of Allah Ta'ala, as you claim, and the house of your ancestry. So it is the religion of your ancestry, it is your religion. You're not even negotiating, you're not even talking about this, you're talking about something so insignificant. So Abdul Muttalib says, "Inna lil bayti rabban sayahmi." The Baytullah, it's got its own owner. It's got its owner, it's got its malik, he will take care of it. Hence, by the same token, Islam has got its owner. It's not a thing that's lying down, that nobody's going to take care of it. It's got its owner, and its owner will take care of Islam. Then you'll find that many obstructions will come on the way of Islam. And this is nothing new. From the very beginning, obstructions came. The beginning of the Nabi's work, and there is an obstruction again. And eventually you find that those that came as an obstruction, they got lost, they got thrown out, and Islam continued. So if anybody is going to come in, he'll get lost. And also you need to understand that you're going to get these obstructions coming in. Time in, time out, you will find these obstructions coming in. But this obstruction shouldn't disillusion you, shouldn't cause any type of despair in you. Sometimes we hear of things overseas, then it brings about despair. Sometimes we hear about things locally, and it causes despair. We hear about an open masjid, and we become despondent what's happening. We hear of what's happening in Iraq, and then again it brings about despondency. So there is no need to be despondent about this. Again, remember the same statement of Abdul Muttalib. إِنَّ لِلْبَيْتِ رَبَّنْ سَيَحْمِي. He will take care of his deen. The deen is going to be preserved. But in this whole equation, what are you supposed to be doing? That's what you need to understand. In this type of thing, what happens is the enemy, they make a lot of business out of this. Too much of popularity. And with the popularity, you begin to become afraid of what's happening. Open masjid, what must you do? See what's happening after Islam. So, more than what's happening is the popularity, the negative popularity, the negative publicity that takes place. And the negative publicity creates the panic and creates the fear. Otherwise, there's hardly any substance in it. If you look into Iraq again, same thing. There's hardly any evidence. There's claims that so-and-so was beheaded, so-and-so was done, this was done to him. But bring the evidence. Proper, concrete, substantial evidence. Everything that is flying around is just on Google, here, there, it's flying around. But is there any substance? Anybody can prove it scientifically that this was the truth. Someone was beheaded like this. Can they prove it? So, the information that we're depending on is what? The information that is brought in through the Google. And the information, the media, who controls it? For a moment, if you think it is atheists, Satanists, it is gays, and Zionists, these three, four people that control the media. And then they will let you believe what they want you to believe. They'll give a picture of Islam like they want you to accept. On your side, now you look at how you are behaving, or say misbehaving. What's our response to the whole situation? Now you need to look at all these things from three dimensions. The one dimension that you need to look at this is that Islam is unlike every other religion. Islam says you are absolutely innocent until you're found guilty. And presently, secularism and Westernism is telling you that you are guilty until you prove your innocence. You are guilty, absolutely guilty until you found you prove your innocence. And really, they don't have a real standard and a yardstick to go by. They don't have it. Now, recently, there is an incident, right? American incident. It's about a couple of weeks or so. So, a multi-millionaire son, right? Not multi-millionaire, multi-millionaire son, bought a very expensive car. He drove it. Perhaps he must have been reckless. And he knocked someone, he killed him. Now there's a whole court proceeding that commences. And the court proves this person that has knocked to be totally innocent, free of all crime. And why is free of all crime? He's free of all crime. This has come just recently. He's free of all crime because of affluenza. You have influenza, and he's got affluenza. And how they interpret that affluenza is because of the amount of wealth that he's holding. Sometimes his brains can't function. And because his brains can't function, so he was not in the right state. So if he killed someone, then he can't be held responsible for that. Now see, if you just turn this whole psychology around, so if someone is suffering from povertenza, then in povertenza he killed someone, will you hold him also equally innocent? You see how this law works? If you just turn it around, does it work for them? And they'll never make it work. Povertenza, they'll never make it work. But affluenza, they made it work. So what I'm getting at is it is lopsided. It is lopsided, the reasoning is lopsided. But we will still go by that lopsided reasoning. We are saying that no, that person is innocent. You find him guilty. Show us concrete, proper, scientific evidence that what you're saying is true. Or they can't show it. Because the picture they're showing of the person is not fitting with the body. There is some problem with that. You go and see it properly. We will just listen to that news. Yeah, how a people could do this type of a thing? How can they do this? Gruesome. How can they do it? But did we go and study? Did we go and examine the whole thing? That the information that is being leaked out and filtered to us, is it true or is it made up and faked up? We just hear one-sided information and then we begin to believe in it. That's the first thing that we need to see, right? The second thing we need to see again is these people that have stood up, what they're fighting for. All they're saying is, we want the truth and the justice of Islam to prevail. That's their claim. What they're saying, that we don't see justice, we don't see truth prevailing, we want to see the truth and the justice of Islam to prevail. If you can uphold this justice and the truth of Islam, then we don't want to fight with you. We don't want your money. We're not interested in anything. You uphold the true tenets, the true faith, the true justice of Islam, and we will leave you. To run your place and to run your affairs in the manner that you want, you can run it. But justice of Islam must prevail. You continue with your style. Oh, this is the demand. Now, what's wrong in this demand of this? Now, when they made this demand, now you see, 30 kuffar and 10 of our brethren have joined them, connived to fight against them. Now, you ask yourself, what are they fighting against? They are saying, we want the truth of Islam, the justice of Islam to prevail. So these people, these 40 people that have connived to fight against them, what are they fighting for? Did we ever ask ourselves, what are they fighting for? They are fighting against deen. These people are wanting deen, and these people that are fighting and opposing, what are they fighting against? They are fighting against deen. I ask you, is their cause more noble or the cause of the Palestinian is more noble? I can't see a doubt and I can't see a discrepancy that these people's cause is much more noble than the Palestinian cause. Because the fight of the Palestinians was for land. And these people's fight and struggle is for deen. So whose cause is more noble? You will not say they were not justified. But when you see the facts, put facts together, then these people's cause, what is it for? Are they fighting for territorial advantage? Or are they fighting and they're struggling only for the truth? If you look at them on the surface, it looks that they are only fighting for the truth, nothing but the truth. Justice of Islam must prevail. We don't want any type of territorial gain or advantage. We just want this. You show us this and we leave the affairs to yourself. But you must show us that you're prepared to maintain the standard of justice of Islam. That's all we want from you. Because every other system is failing, is flopping. Like I'm showing you, affluenza. You see, the news is carrying this article here and they're talking about affluenza. So their stance is only for the truth. Number three, the third thing to notice and to study in this whole thing is the level of Islam these people have got, right, compete against the level of Islam of Palestine. Palestine, if they got 10%, these people got 100%. 90% here is all Western influence, jeans and tops, and nor the women have got the proper libas, nor men have got the proper libas. And these people got 100% Islam. comparatively. And the fourth thing that we all fail to understand, that the West made a lot of claims, right? A lot of claims they made, and in all their claims, their dishonesty was proven. They spoke about the twin towers. Up till this day, scientifically they can't prove that they were absolutely true in this. Was it something that was mocked by a jet, or was it an implosion? What was it? People that are studying it, they say it can't be something that was knocked down by a jet. It was an internal thing, it was an implosion. So look, the credibility is gone. There's no credit in what they're saying. Number two, look at it. When they came into Afghanistan, they came into Iraq, right? They came under what pretext? To destroy weapons of mass destruction. Now I ask you, who has got those weapons of mass destruction? Have they got it, or these poor little people, Afghanistanis and Iraqis? They got nothing. Iraq has got nothing. Afghan has got nothing. But they came here to destroy weapons of mass destruction. Now, do you see the inconsistency? Absolutely not consistent at all. They got nothing. They can't find up to date, they can't find anything. But yet, because they control the media, therefore we have got the tendency of believing what they're saying. But there's no credibility when their falsehood has been proven beyond the shadow of doubt. And then added to that is our brethren that have supported them. Now this is exactly like what the Quran Sharif has said. وَيَقُولُ الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ نَخْشَىٰ أَن تُصِيبَنَا دَائِرَةٌ. The Quran Sharif instructed and commanded, break up your relationship from the kuffar, the Jews, Christians, Buddhists, etc. Then you break up your relationship. Because this relationship is such a thing, it starts off in a very innocent, very mild manner, very slow. You begin to have that type of friendship. You first become mild, casual, have a meal or something together. But he doesn't stop at that point, it progresses. One thing leads to the other. It starts off in a very innocent manner. It starts off very, very mild. But that disbelief has got the power to attract you, to pull you towards itself. I normally quote this incident. A youngster, innocent, good Hindu boy, right, comes into a company. Very good, clean habits, no wrong habits he's got. Now, in the lunch break, he joins up in a circle of friends that are all addicts, smoking. He just wants to enjoy the company, he doesn't want to be isolated, joining up the company. Then at the second level, he says, let me just light the cigarette for you. And in a matter of about a year, he becomes a chain smoker for 60 cigarettes a day. But how he started off, very, very innocent. Starts off very innocent. And what is the end point? That is the end point. So Islam tells you, don't start it off. You're going to start this relationship up, then this is where it's going to end. This one is going to take you. It doesn't stop there. This evil and this wrong doesn't stop there. So you're going to start off this type of friendship. This is the point it's going to reach you. It's going to take you up to. At the beginning, it looks so innocent. Wearing their jeans. I'm just wearing their clothing. I just got a t-shirt. So it looks so innocent. But does it stop there? No, it carries on. One thing to the other. You begin to like the second thing. And you begin to thereafter entertain the third thing. From their clothing, to their culture, to their ways, to their mannerisms. In your weddings, is their mannerisms? Is their culture? In your styles, is their culture? Inside your homes, it's their culture? And you feel proud about yourself when you got a home designed according to their culture. Now, don't you have a culture of your own? Now, you look at many new homes, right? New homes, and look at it. You can't even say that it's a Muslim home, but it's designed in an open style. Like you got an open masjid, now you got an open home, and an open home is what? All these words are all indicating to the one thing, same thing, open masjid, open home, and corporate environment. all got one thing in common. The thing that they got in common is they must be able to have some type of a free communication with the opposite sex. Everything in all these three, whether it's corporate, whether it is open home, whether it is open masjid. You want an open plan, this is what you're asking for. It must be open. Don't make this prohibition that you can't talk to this girl and you can't be casual about that woman there, you can't be talking to that person's wife. Don't talk about that. Let us be open. This is what he's saying. But then we feel quite proud. Now, you know, I come from a corporate environment. Now, they use that big word, but that big word, what he's saying, is zina, but in a more glorious, in a more polished manner. They won't call it like, you know, it's a fornicating environment. They won't say it. They call it a corporate environment. But they're doing the same activities of zina, same thing. With the eyes, with the ears, the tongue. The girl is led into that direction. Eventually, then she becomes the admiration for everybody that's around. Everybody must admire her, everybody must talk to her, everybody must be casual towards her. And if she's not in the business environment, there's something wrong with her. That she can't be a money-making machine, there's something wrong with that woman. Now, this again, it's a circular value that's injected into us. And then we will keep it, so a Muslim also will employ such a type of a woman, and we will say, no, she has to look after home. She has to look after home. So as though we're sympathizing with this woman. Within our minds, we are appeasing ourselves, and we are sympathizing with this woman. But really what's happening? What's happening behind the screens? This whole ploy seems to be a kuffar ploy. And how it started off in this manner, that the original man felt that there was a distribution of work. That within the home, it's the domain of the woman, right? She must take the care of the children, food, upkeep of the home, all that was her duty. So you were seeing that from our own home, there were intelligent people, good valued people, respectable people coming up, right? Right. But in that system, there was a distribution of work. In the distribution of work, what man was doing, man was supplementing the income and she was taking care of his affairs. This was happening, right? Now, man became lazy. When he became lazy, he says, now why must I take the burden on myself? She must also take some of the burden. Now, that's a sign of his laziness. Sign that he doesn't want to assume responsibility fully. So, because of his laziness, he doesn't want to assume full responsibility. He said, no, I'm assuming responsibility. She must also assume responsibility. Because he can't see money coming out from her. He can't see money. He can't see any type of a commercial value in her. The only value he sees is real values. He sees values in commerce. In real values, he doesn't see a value. You know, I was just explaining to someone, just through an example of showing someone. Look at the style of our homes nowadays, right? You build a home, and you are very, very careful, very, very particular about the facelift. You must give it a facelift. It must look so smart, so attractive. So the face of the home must look so smart. You spend so much upon just the face. But then when you compare the home, when you understand the home and analyze, then the inside of the home is much more important than the face. If the face is too beautiful, but the plumbing is not right, the lighting is not right, the windows are not right, the roof is not right, does it make a difference? Say, no, by that face, leave it at a secondary level. I need to see that every system in this house is working. The plumbing is right, the lighting is right, the appliances are right. The doors are right, the toilets are working. This is what I need to see. What am I going to do with the face of the house? I don't need to work with the face of the house. The face is the secondary thing. The more important thing is the house itself. Is it functioning right? Is it functioning? Can I use all the functions of the house? That's the secondary. This is a secondary thing compared to all the functions of the house. Then if you look at the function within the home, appliances, the different systems that you got, whether it's toilet, whether it's kitchen, whether it is the plumbing, whether it's the electrical, whatever else. So you compare that against the individual that's living in the home, then the individual is even more important than all this that's around. If he's got all the functions, everything is functioning very well, but the man is on a life support. He is sickly, coughing all the time, life support, nebulizer, you got this support here, that medication. So I ask you, what's better? With all these finishes, with the life support, living with a nebulizer and 10, 20 different type of medication, or have a simple home, but enjoy good health. What is better? Obviously, it is that good health that you will enjoy. Now again, come one step ahead, come one step forward. I'm showing you three levels. Now look at the third step. Look at the step, third step. Now the man is there, he's living all right. But outwardly he looks perfect. Within him, his liver is failing, his kidney is failing, he needs to go for a dialysis every week. But outwardly he looks so nice, he's walking around. But every week he needs to go for a dialysis. Now, is that enjoyable? Do you enjoy that? Or will you prefer that he is supposed to be enjoying good health, though the home may not be so good, though the appliances and all may be not so good, but though his outward appearance may not seem to be too good, but within him all his organs, everything are functioning very well. His eyes are right, the internal organs, the heart, the liver, the lungs, the kidneys, everything are functioning very, very well. So what do you give a preference to? Do you give your outside looks a preference, or your inner organs, do you give that a preference? You will only be able to enjoy all this if the organs, the inner systems are functioning well. But if the inner systems are all failing and collapsing and all falling apart, and the outside, the body is looking so well and so attractive, what's the need? What's the good? Every week, two times you have to go for the dialysis treatment. The heart is not right, take this type, 20 type of medication. Can't eat this food here, you must live out of this food here. But you've got every system in the house. Outside, your body is looking so beautiful. The face of the home also is looking so beautiful and attractive. But within you, everything is collapsing. As though you're going to just die at any time. At any time, you're in a bombshell. At any time you can explode. Now, this is the third level. I'm showing you the outside of the home, the facelift. Then I show you the inside of the home. You've got every appliance. It's more important than just having the facelift. Then I show you that the individual that's living in the home is more important that he be good. But within him also, one is the inner dimension, one is the outer dimension. More than the outer dimension is the inner dimension. Is he comfortable within him? Or are his organs all failing and collapsing apart? What's more important? Then if he's looking quite well, his organs are all functioning very well, but with all this, everything that's going around, and then it turns around that his son is drugging, and he has to service that habit, 40,000-50,000 every month, 100,000 every month, and he comes to the masjid, how's your son? It's alright, you need any support, can I go and speak to him? Now how do you feel? You feel, hey, I don't want to come to the masjid, because everybody is going to see me, and they're going to talk to me about this. Now this is a thing that I can't sleep, I can't live with. You have situations where people say, take these millions from me, but get my son right. Because he did everything for his son. And then when he didn't go in the right line, now eventually he sees what's the culmination of all his effort. See, the house was right, the business was right, the inside of the house was right, his body was right, everything is functioning, he's gymming and doing everything else. But then at the end, the culmination of all his effort, the product of all his effort is his son. And his son is failing him, he's letting him down. How does he feel? Does he feel comfortable with himself? In any gathering, does he feel acceptable there? He doesn't feel nice. He needs to hide away his shame. Son is drugging, and daughter is loose and she's just running around every while. How does he feel? In any gathering, how does he look? So the net sum of all our effort is the inside of your heart. And the inside of your heart, the comfort of the heart is, فَلَنُحْيَنَّهُ حَيَاةً طَيِّبًا. You do the righteous work, and eventually Allah Pak will guarantee you what? فَلَنُحْيَنَّهُ حَيَاةً طَيِّبًا. An enjoyable, pure life. Maybe you don't get so much of a facelift, you don't get that appliance, you don't get that popularity, you don't get that outside looks and all that. But from within you, what Allah Ta'ala guarantees you, a beautiful, enjoyable life. Now, sometimes we forget these things here. So I was just comparing this Palestinian and what's happening now, right? So the whole credibility is lost, finished. So when the credibility is lost, now can you take their word? Now, if it is that some of our Muslims or some of our brethren are all supporting them, it doesn't mean because they are supporting them, therefore they are right. Now look at the situation. We quoted the Quranic verse. نَخْشَىٰ أَن تُصِيبَنَا دَائِرَةً. There is a situation where Allah is commanding break of your relationship. Just ostracize, you break them. Don't have that relationship with them. As far as kindness and compassion towards Muslim and non-Muslims, then Islam is second to none. So remember that even towards non-Muslims, we are kind. We will show a very strong level, a very high level of kindness, very high level of justice. But we'll keep everything in place. The woman is in her place, man is in his place. We won't mix up things. When we mix up things, mix up values, then we force the girl out of the home into the streets. Under the pretext, what if something happened to this one? What if? But really what it was, that I wanted a break from, I wanted some type of an ease in my laziness. I am seeing to the expenses of the home. Why must I take it individually? I must take half and she must take half. Is that fair? She's got the responsibility, she's loaded with the responsibility of the children, of the house, of the food, of yourself, and with all these four responsibilities, then she must also supplement an income. So then what is this woman then? Then she's just a friend. Nothing more than a friend. You haven't given her a right. But under what pretexts? That she's just wasting time here, she's not doing, she must do something. So in your heart, a commercial value is a value. If your child went into drugs, it's alright. But a commercial value is a value. Now, aren't we then leading our children in that direction? Are we all? Ask yourself, are you leading your child in that direction or not? You got that woman in your shop. Now look at it in retrospect with a clear, unprejudiced mind. You got them in your shop, in your business, you've got them. What percentage of those women are not molested, interfered with? Ask me, I will tell you, because many of these women speak to me personally. The boss is interfering, someone down the line is interfering. Either he's getting into a casual conversation, he's touching, he's doing something. He's doing something. If not all, someone is doing it. And someone that's got a little bit of more influence over us, he's doing it. And she says, my job will be on the line. What must I do? But who forced her out of her home into this type of a situation? Ask yourself. And where did it come from? It came from this. لَا تَتَّخِذُ الْيَهُودَ وَالنَّصَارَ أَوْلِيَاءَ. That don't take these people as your friends. If you start it off, this is where it's going to end up. If it's happening to their woman today, Umarji Sahib Rahmatullahi, that was the West Street Imam, he said, if you're going to start off with their woman, tomorrow your woman also be victims. All are Allah's children. Whether it is a non-Muslim, whether it's a Christian, whether it's a black, whether it's a white, whatever it is. But they are all children of Allah, His creation. If you interfering with them, tomorrow it's your daughters that's going to be on the line, they're going to be interfered with. So that's an invitation. When you brought them into the business, then this is what's going to happen eventually. Now it's your selfishness, but you cover up your selfishness. How we help, you know, sympathizing for, give her a job, at least she'll help her family going on. One is a genuine extreme situation. It's a genuine and an extreme situation where you need to help the person. Then too, you create certain parameters that she must live within. That nobody can molest her, nor can you ever take any type of an advantage from her. Now she's in a pitiable condition, and she allows you to take a little bit of advantage over her, because she knows at the end of the month what favors she's going to be receiving. So for the favors that she's going to be receiving, she has to give in some favors. Really, I feel very ashamed. Sometimes people call you in their business. I feel very, nine out of ten, I just stop it, say, no, I don't want to go. And the reason why I don't want to go is I see this type of environment. And as though my presence will be condoning that type of business. Say, no, you rather just, I'll make dua for you, just remain there. But you see where this thing starts off. It starts off at this point. Now, you look at one generation down, this woman became a businesswoman. What happens to her children? Now, she is in the laps of a nanny, of someone else, And one, two generations down the line, what happens to this woman? What happens to her children? What happens to her progeny? The whole concern becomes commerce. And then it's a ruin of your own progeny. Your own progeny is going, it's getting wiped off. Finished. Khalas, wiped out. So nibbling the bud, Islam is saying, La tattakhidhu al-Yahuda wa al-Nasara, don't take them as friends. So you're going to start it off, then you're going to go with them all the time. You have jumped on to a wrong train. When you jumped on, you're just latching on one point to the next point, to the third point, and then eventually you begin to then agree with everything that's in them. So now he's a gay, now it's his life, he must do what he wants, I will do what I want. You become a little bit open-minded. You become open-minded as though you're in agreement with what he's doing. Does it happen or doesn't it happen? Don't we have that compromising attitude afterwards? Don't we have that all-embracing attitude afterwards? We embrace him also, embrace kafir, Muslim, everybody, anybody and everybody we embrace. Do we have that attitude or not? So where does it come from? It comes from this point. You know, just for your information, I don't mean to be hard, I don't mean to embarrass anybody. But there are quite a few high school youngsters that come for the Islam, Reformation, etc., right? And they tell you, very safely they tell you, that whether it's an Islamic school, whether it's a government school, whether it's a private school, at least 80% of the youngsters are having some type of a relationship with those girls. Call it an Islamic school, call it a private school, call it whatever type of school, whatever structures you have got, but that child is under some type of an assault. Someone is interfering with her. She is doing it willingly, she's doing it. How do you know? What's happening? But under the pretext, it's such a glorified pretext that my child, you know, she is going to this school here and she came over with 6 A's, 7 A's. So that's all a commercial value. But what Islam she's got? What's the level of taqwa that she's got? What's the level of purity that she's got? Did you examine the level of her purity? Did you look at the level of her chastity? Or we just look at her as a commercial product that she must be able to produce so much? How do we look at her child? Do we really have that love for her? While she's in the midst of a university, studies, right, and she's talking to a professor or someone she's discussing, and a malakul maut comes at that time, at that moment malakul maut strikes, and people say, your daughter died, you know, when she was talking to a student or something about, will you appreciate that? Can that happen or can't that happen? So therefore the Quran says, لا تتخذوا اليهود والنصارى, or don't take them as friends. Because every value of theirs will become agreeable to you. So nobody about, don't even go that line. You join them, and you'll take them right through. You went with them in the education. You went with them in the culture. And it's an embarrassment even for me that we have to use their language to communicate. And you feel proud. He speaks so well English. Oh, he's such a polished person. He's so intelligent. So where these values are coming from? We left hamare ghar ki cheezon ko humne chhod di. Things that belong to our home, we left it out. We took it from the stranger's home. Then when we took it from the stranger's home, that it will take us to that same end that they are going. So the right way is by stop this. That whether it's a Jew, whether it's a Christian, whether it's a Buddhist, whether it's a Hindu, by it's your way, this is my way. We are doing business, but keep it till that point. But we're not going to be joining up with you further than this point, and you're not going to be joining up with us further than this point. You keep to yourself, and I keep to my ways. In our businesses, now it's a requirement, Muslim business, we wear this type of a clothing. You wear a kuffar clothing, acceptable in our business. A Muslim clothing, not acceptable in our business. You see that? Is it a requirement or not? I ask you. So where have you drifted? We're feeling embarrassed of our own deen. Really, it's embarrassment, we feel inferior of our own selves. So when this verse was revealed, لَا تَتَّخِذُ الْيَهُودَ وَالنَّصَارَ أَوْلِيَاءَ, there were two classes of people. One was Ubadah ibn Samit radiallahu anhu. And he broke up totally. Although these Jews, etc., they were money lenders like the banks today. Again, today's fitna is everything must be polished. Everything must be polished. Must look Islamic. So when you look at it, must look Islamic. Whether it's Islamic or not, it's all right. But it must look and it must appear like Islamic. So call it Islamic finance. So do all the same rubbish, but call it Islamic finance. Yeah? And say, you know, YAFA standards. Yeah? And then have the same interest, have the same usury system, but just with a different pretext. Say, you know, it's a penalty for a deferred payment. I ask you, what's the difference between a penalty for a deferred payment and interest? That kafir that is charging interest is the same thing. The deferred payment and a penalty on that and interest, is there any difference? Show me the difference. What's the difference? So every system of the kuffar will be in ourselves, but we'll just give it an Islamic look, glorified, polished look. Whether it is Islamic or not, whether it conforms or not, that's not our business. We must just have an Islamic look. Nobody can say openly that we are doing it. The way we'll twist it and turn it around, but we'll say it's an Islamic thing. You know, I was speaking to one businessman when they talk about the Islamic insurance, etc. So I asked him, but what is insurance? What is gambling? What is gambling? It's a return on a transaction or it's a return for some event that is uncertain, right? Isn't it a return on an event that is uncertain? Is it not? Do you agree on that? We agree on that, that it's a return on an event that is uncertain. Now, when you look at an insurance, whichever way you look at it, whether it's takaful or whatever, whichever way you look at it, isn't it a return on an event that is uncertain? Ji? Is it not a return on an event that is uncertain? So what's the difference between this and going to Sibaya? Sibaya, you went to casino, hey, Dari wala, Musliman, Kurta wala is going there. But I ask, what's the difference? I ask you, a return on an event that is uncertain, right? Now, this is the definition. But this is the definition, it's applicable here, why is it not applicable there? Why is there this discrepancy? For this you said it's right, this, why don't you say it's right? When you talk about interest and you say, you're getting more than what you had given in. It's a condition that I must get more than what I had given. If I'd given 10 rands, then I must get 12 rands. This is a precondition that was made, right? So this is the very definition of interest, right? So 10 rands against 10 rands, that's understood. I gave 10 rands, you're returning 10 rands. The 2 rands you're getting over and above your deposit, what you're getting for, in return for what? I ask you, the 2 rand that you're getting in excess is in return for what? In exchange of nothing. Mahala, you're getting the 2 rands. So this is called interest. Now I ask you, these two elements, do they exist in takaful? Do they exist in any insurance system or not? So then why do we say this is permissible, not permissible? Isn't it just a glorified way? Isn't it just a polished way to halalize something, in the words of the majlis? Is it not? Rather than we do that haram and say, Allah Bak, we're doing haram, Allah Bak, make us maaf. Rather than polishing the whole thing, polishing that excreta and giving it a very glossy look. Call it excreta, one day you'll have the tawfiq to leave it out. But you gave it a glossy look, now you'll never have the tawfiq to leave it out. The grace to leave it out, you'll never have the grace. Say, I'm doing haram. Allah Bak, I'm doing haram, I don't want to play games with you. I'm doing haram, it's haram. I believe it's haram. See, that Sayyidul Istighfar is teaching you that lesson. Sayyidul Istighfar is the best istighfar. You made that istighfar in the night and you died as a shaheed. You made that istighfar in the morning and you died, and then you died as a shaheed. But what is the very essence, the gist of that istighfar? Abu laka bi dhambi. Allah Ta'ala, I accept that I'm wrong. And this type of system, what is telling you? Oh Allah Ta'ala, I accept that I'm right. Allah Ta'ala, you must accept that what I'm doing is right. And what is this istighfar teaching you to say? Allah Ta'ala, I accept, I acknowledge what I'm doing is wrong. Allah Ta'ala, I'm hands up. I don't want to play games. I don't want to confuse. I don't want to complicate things. I want to come straight and tell you, Allah Ta'ala, I'm wrong of what I'm doing. Allah, give me the tawfiq, give me the strength that I leave this thing out. And what is this teaching you? I ask you. What is he teaching? Is it going on the same line or a different, totally opposite line? So when this verse was revealed, لَا تَتَّخِذُ الْيَهُودَ وَالنَّصَارَ أَوْلِيَاءَ, don't take them as friends. So there was one response of genuine Sahaba Ikiram, Ubadah ibn Sabit, said, no, I break up. In spite of the fact that I had so much of gain from this Yahud, because they were moneylenders. We got a problem, we got a constraint, some catastrophe, some disaster, we go to them and they help us out. But Allah's command is, break away. Now, Ubadah ibn Samit could have used his own mind, say, you know what, Islam teaches us that we must be good to someone that's been good to us, you know. So let us be good to them, you know. We don't have to break, don't become an extremist overnight and all that. He could have used that type of mentality what we're using today. So, no, this is the command of Allah Ta'ala. Break away, class. End of the story. I don't want to hear what type of advantages, what gains we got. In khiftum aylatan fasufa yughnikum Allahu min fadli. If you are afraid of poverty, Allah Ta'ala will grant you that wealth. Are you afraid of that? Allah Ta'ala will grant it to you. Say, no, I break up totally. But then there was the other person, Abdullah ibn Ubay ibn Salul, the munafiq, that's known, right? Ra'isul Munafiqin, chief munafiq. And he says, Naqsha an tusibana da'ira. I'm afraid if I am confronted with disaster, then I have got my avenues all closed up. My doors are all closed up to this Yahud. His money lenders, his bankers, etc. My avenues are all closed up because I fought with them. Like, what mouth, what face do I have to go and ask them to bail me out? Do I have any face to go and ask them to bail me out? So this was his response. Now, I ask you, that these Muslims that are supporting this, right? What is the mindset? The mindset is exactly like Abdullah ibn Ubay ibn Salul. They are saying also within their minds, exactly the same thing what Abdullah ibn Ubay ibn Salul says. Say, for example, now they are saying that if this thing doesn't work out, we need to have our avenues all open, our doors all open, and we can still reach them, we can still keep them as our bully boys, you know. We have to give them that protection fees. When we have given them our protection fees, they are taking care of us. Naqsha an tusibana da'ira. I ask you, what's the difference? No difference. When you compare them, you know, like for like, and exactly the behavior of this munafiq Abdullah ibn Ubay ibn Salul is being portrayed by these 10 so-called Muslims. Exactly the same. And exactly the same statements. Naqsha an tusibana da'ira. We are afraid. We are afraid that some disaster may befall us. If the disaster befalls us, have we got any door to tap on and to ask for any type of assistance? We don't want to spoil our relationship. Now we're going to spoil our relationship. Tomorrow we're in disaster. Who's going to help us out? See, exactly what this Ra'isul Munafiqin said, these people are saying the same thing. So Allah Ta'ala speaks to us, مَنْ يَرْتَدَّ مِنْكُمْ عَنْ دِينِهِ. You have jumped off the train of Islam. So, it's not a problem for Islam. It's a problem for you. You jumped off, it's at your peril. This train is taking you to the shore of safety. You want to climb on? You want to jump on? This is your gain. This is your advantage. And you want to jump off? This is your disaster. But you think that your jumping off will bring any type of a calamity to Islam? No, don't forget it. This thing is going to carry on. This train is going to move. It's going to move. It's not going to stop. And that is the promise of Allah Ta'ala. لا يزال طائفة من أمتي قائمين على الحق لا يضرهم من خذلهم. This is going to continue. You jumped off, it's your disaster. It's your problem. So these people that will come in, what will be the sifat? What will be the attributes? What will be the qualities? Now this was sort of a prophecy of the Quran Sharif. The prophecy of the Quran Sharif came true. The first person upon whom this prophecy was realized and on whom it became manifest was no other than Hazrat Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu. He was the first person on whom this prophecy had come up, exactly like the Quran Sharif says. And Abu Bakr Siddiq is the first person that is carrying on this prophecy. Now, it is the time that Rasulullah is leaving the world. And then you get these people turning up from Islam. Big clans, Banu Hanfiya, Banu Asad, and Muzjaj, all they're leaving Islam. Big affluent people, they are leaving Islam. And then you get a second category of people who are refusing to pay out zakat. And they say, no, no, this was only meant for Rasulullah some time. It's not supposed to be continuing after him. Khudh min amwalim was a command directed to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that he must accept their zakat. So now Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is gone, no zakat. Right. And Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu is saying that I will take whatever Nabi Sam used to be taking, I would take. Even if it was just a robe that he used to take in zakat, I would take that as well. And if anybody is going to refuse to do that, then I will wage jihad against him. And then he goes on to say, just as namaz is a duty of this body, it's an obligation directed to the body, zakat is an obligation directed to wealth. This is a duty, obligation from Allah Ta'ala directed to the body. This is an obligation directed to the wealth. So what's the difference? Both duties are coming from above. He is saying that this is the duty of the body, this is the duty of the wealth. Why should there be this type of inconsistency? Why should there be this discrepancy? Sahaba Ikram are really, really worried at this time. Because now they got a problem from without, the neighboring Muslims that are coming into Islam, the new converts, they have turned out. And within now, they are thinking to themselves that when there are people that are refusing to give zakat, and this within, we've got an internal strife, we've got an external problem. When we've got a dual problem, then we should be more concerned about the internal. Otherwise, we've got an external and internal problem. And Abu Bakr says, no, you move it. And he says to that, together with that, he says, if you people are not prepared, then I will mount my animal and I will leave out myself. And saying this, he strapped the sword, mounted his animal and he's out. And then Ali comes in and he says, Shim Seifak wala tufji'na bi firaqik. Sheath back your sword and don't you cause us grief because of your separation. Who do we have after you? After Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, we only have you. And you also going away. Until Allah Pak opened their hearts. What Abu Bakr is saying is right. You see, people jumped off. And how Allah Ta'ala, immediately there's a replacement. Immediately there's a replacement. This train of Islam, you're not going to stop. Whoever is going to come, he'll get crushed and he'll get thrown out. Immediately, Nabi Sam has left the world and immediately Abu Bakr comes in. So this is not going to be deserted. It's not going to be isolated. It'll be carrying on, continuing. On that occasion, Abdullah ibn Masud radiallahu anhu says, you know, we were really confused at that. Because it's an internal and external thing. What do we do? Where do we draw the line? And we were not clear about it until when we saw the consequence of Abu Bakr radiallahu's stance, then we realized definitely he was right in what he was doing. Only after everything had transpired, then could we see the wisdom of Abu Bakr radiallahu's stance. Before that, we didn't know what was the wisdom. Hazrat Umar radiallahu used to say, and he used to praise Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu, and he would say, you know, I want to bargain my entire life for just 2 days of Abu Bakr. One is the night when he spent the night with Nabi Sam in the cave, and one is the day when he took the stance against all these people that we should wage jihad against them. These are the 2 days that I want to just bargain with Abu Bakr. Because I can see what was the good that came out of it. You know, the beauty, the goodness that came out of it. It's something that you can't negotiate. You can't bargain with. It's so expensive, so valuable what he's got. Because he saved Islam. You know, apparently Allah Pak does things, obviously. But as though he saved, entire Islam he saved. And Abu Hurairah radiallahu anhu says that his stance of stability was like the stance of the Anbiya alayhi salam. And that, you know, in a few days and everything, he just covered up again. So you see, taking the stance of stability, etc., is to your own favor. You will do it, and Allah Pak will make things happen. فَسَوْفَ يَأْتِ اللَّهُ بِقَوْمٍ يُحِبُّهُمْ وَيُحِبُّونَ. He will bring about a people who Allah Ta'ala will love. Allah Pak says, I love you. Then can you be broken down? Can you be desolate? Can you be in any type of distress? But Allah Pak says, I am with you. فَسَوْفَ يَأْتِ اللَّهُ بِقُومِ I love you. Can you be in any problem? No problem. I'll guarantee you, when Allah says, I love the person. I love him. Anything else does he need? يَأْتِ اللَّهُ بِقَوْمِ يُحِبُّهُمْ وَيُحِبُّونَ And they will also love Allah Ta'ala. Because love is not a one-sided affair. It's two-sided. You can't really be making love. You'll receive love as well. Allah Ta'ala.